to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Today I'm joined by JD Graffam. I'm sure a lot of folks who listen to the show know of JD and what they're doing over at Simple Focus. So I'm really excited to jump into a lot of the areas of his business and some really cool things that I think he's doing there. So JD, how's it going?
I'm doing great today. How about you?
Doing well. Thanks. Thanks for taking some time to chat. I appreciate it. Yeah, we've been kind of chatting back and forth a little bit on Twitter and obviously been following a lot of the things you guys have been doing. I think it's interesting to see how you guys are heavy into kind of like work culture. And I know you guys are big on kind of team and how you guys work. But for folks who don't know as much about you guys and what you're doing at Simple Focus, you want to give a little background on who you guys are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. We're actually working through that as we redesign our website. So we're coming with all kinds of ways to express it. But, you know, if I were to just speak from my heart, it's a company that I started. It's, you know, my first real company in 2009. And from the very beginning, I was always focused on making a place where people could be happy doing what they were born to do. And for us, that is based in the belief that, you know, we love making websites. And one of the things that we love making websites, or one of the reasons we love making websites is because, I said websites, apps, you know, products as well, is because at the end of the day, it's a way to give people a good customer service experience, because good usability is good customer service. And, you know, whatever you call it with today's buzzwords, whether it's CX or whatever,
right,
that's at the end of the day, what it's one of the fulfilling things about our work. And then I realized I could make a company that does that when I realized that if somebody like at an organization believes that user experience should be part of their strategy, and that's the kind of person we want to work with, because we specialize in doing, you know, great user experience.
Cool. And so Simple Focus is a bit of a hybrid web dev design services, as well as you guys run some products of your own, right?
Well, Simple Focus, going back to 2009, we started out as a web design and product design agency. Things went really well. And by the time 2012-13 rolled around, I had a relationship with some guys who had a product that they were looking to sell that was an app called Pulse. And so I bought Pulse in 2013. And that was the first experience I had actually owning and operating a product of our own. Actually, I haven't ever started one from scratch that's gotten to profitability or anything. So my success in the product space has been through acquisitions and then owning, managing, and running them. Something that a lot of people may not realize is that I also co-founded a custom software development agency a couple of years ago as well, called Clear Function. But I spend my days going to work at Simple Focus, and Clear Function is someone we partner with quite a bit, and there's some shared ownership there. But at the end of the day, Simple Focus is the consulting agency that does all the work for, you know, whether it's SaaS businesses or big companies or little companies, it doesn't matter. And then in addition to that, we also run, at this point, we seriously operate about 5 profitable SaaS businesses inside of Simple Focus.
So I guess the running joke is that this podcast is a little self-serving for Dave and I, because we bring on people as guests who we really want to talk to and learn from. And you're definitely a good example of that, because both Dave and I find ourselves with our hands in multiple buckets these days, where we're both essentially running 3 different quote businesses or business units, mm-hmm, or products or whatever. And yep. It's really, 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 really hard. And I have days where
that's an understatement.
I have days where I have 27 tabs in Chrome open, and I've even come to my newest thing is I have 3 different Chrome windows, one for each of my quote businesses. So I have like Intercom open and this one, and Gmail open and that one for the other business, and all the other websites and apps, and it sucks. It sucks.
Yeah, you need to get your life together.
I do. No, it's a mess. It's a mess. And it's just, you know, I think I'm an unorganized person by nature, and so that's why I'm so bad at this. But I like having a lot of different things going on. I would just like to be able to organize them better. So I'd love to hear, I mean, you have twice as much stuff going on as probably we do. And from everything I kind of see and hear, it's a well-oiled machine. So I'd love to hear kind of a little bit about how you think about all your multiple businesses, and then maybe we can dive into some of the details of actually being productive with so many things going on.
Sure. Well, thanks for saying that. Everything always looks better from the outside than from the inside. I'll lead off by saying that because, you know, we've got to maintain a little bit of humility about not knowing what we're doing at all times. But I think one of the things that I've got going for me is that the team really believes in the business and they love coming to work. You know, I don't know where y'all are at with your businesses, but one of the things that makes it possible for me is that, you know, I've got a team of employees and a profitable business with folks who can spend the time doing a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, needing 3 Chrome windows open and 27 Chrome tabs. For me, on any given day, I've got 4 or 5 Chrome tabs open, for what it's worth. And it's my to-do list. You know, it's our invoicing software for Simple Focus. And it's got this this app that we built that isn't out on the market yet that we're testing, that brings in multiple Stripe accounts and gives me the KPIs for everything in one place, rather than having to log out and log into different SaaS metrics services. So we've got this thing that tells me what my MRR is and my churn for all the apps. I keep that open and I look at it. And not much more than that, you know, and I've got my email open. I've got too many email accounts, but they all kind of forward to one place. At the end of the day, I keep it simple because I can trust the people who are, you know, working on the business to actually follow through and want to do a good job and have the brains and the smarts and the work ethic to get it done.
Yeah.
Can I follow up on that, JD? So how do you know, you know, what's your philosophy in terms of managing? I mean, I get you've hired smart people and you empower them to do great stuff in the business. I mean, we all want to do that. You don't want to hire idiots. That's counterproductive.
Sure.
But how is it that you sort of prioritize, you know, is it sort of like a biggest fire and that gets your focus for the day? Or do you have sort of like a round robin that you do? So maybe there's individual product managers and you talk to them like a certain amount, like once a week, once a day, check in with Slack. Like, you know, what are some of the nitty gritty logistics there of how do you manage that? You know, if you're doing this in 4 or 5 Chrome tabs, I want to know the secret, man.
It's called Tuesdays. Tuesdays are the big days that I have for all my internal meetings. That's when everybody sits down with me for their JD time. Once a month, I mentioned that I've got a business partner who I co-founded this custom software development agency, Clear Function, with. I sit down with him for breakfast once a month, about 7:30 in the morning on Tuesdays. Also, once a month, I've got a couple of startups going that don't have their name out there that I'm not promoting, that we're trying to get customer base built up for. And we meet about that once a month at about 10 a.m. on Tuesdays. And then usually the afternoon on Tuesdays is packed. I've got a weekly meeting just to kind of go over who I'm talking to about what and what's getting scheduled. And that's with my executive assistant. I've got a new business update on Tuesdays. I've got an operations meeting on Tuesdays. And I've got a product operations meeting on Tuesdays as well. Now, the product operations meeting is 5 or 6 apps, depending on, you know, what week it is. And that is one guy, Calvin, who sits down with me and goes over the state of things. But I'm getting a little bit of relief from that because on everybody's 5th year working for Simple Focus, you get a 1 month paid sabbatical. So Calvin's on his sabbatical this month, which means I'm not getting those updates on the products. And so my hands are a little bit busier, just kind of keeping tabs on some things this month. But then when May comes back, you know, that rhythm will go. So my Tuesdays are just slam packed with meetings. I've got, you know, lunch usually brought in, you know, and I'm just in my desk all day on Tuesdays. The rest of the week is Mondays and Fridays are pretty meeting free. And then Wednesday, Thursdays are building relationships with customers and doing sales and then kind of walking around and talking to people and seeing how things are going, what they're working on, and being available.
Okay.
I'd love to hear, you talk a lot about trusting and having a good team around you. And I think this is something that a lot of us go back to with being able to effectively delegate. There's a lot of like systems and processes and stuff, but it's also really good people. And Dave and I have talked a little bit in the past about like, if you hire a really good people, the systems and the processes aren't as important. Can you talk about how you guys have approached hiring on the, and I guess specifically on the SaaS side to manage your products?
Well, so we hired through the agency first, never really hired anybody directly on the SaaS side. They've grown into the SaaS as the business has grown into the SaaS. In fact, Calvin, who I was telling you is basically GMing all of the products, started out as a front-end developer, just an HTML CSS jockey for Simple Focus 5 years ago, a month ago. And he was responsible at Simple Focus for a role that we lovingly dubbed the trailer hitch. It was kind of his job title. Well, Calvin's the trailer hitch. Anytime something small or nitpicky came through for a customer, whether it's support or just a build that needed to happen, anything that you just needed somebody really reliable to execute on, it was always Calvin. One of the things that we look for when we're identifying people who are a good fit here, the biggest word that matters more than anything else to me is accountability. Someone who's willing to take ownership and accountability for their decisions. Now, the definition of accountability, we mean it quite literally. It doesn't mean, oh yeah, I mean, I'm going to make decisions. It means somebody who's able and confident enough to know why they made the decision and then to be able to repeat that reasoning back to you when you ask them why they made that decision. So you know that they have accounted for it like you would, you know, in a ledger.
Yeah.
Well, this is the outcome. This is the decision I made, and here's how I arrived at that. You know, I am accounting for it. So here's the trail of logic. So someone who's accountable is really key. The other thing that we really value a great deal is humility. Those are some of the softest skills you can imagine, right? Accountability and humility, like, you know. You mean you don't want somebody that's got like customer support experience or something? But yeah, of course we're going to be looking for skill sets. Humility at the end of the day is a big reason that people are able to learn. And I love working with people who are lifelong learners. It's people who are teachable, people who grow, people who you don't have to repeat the same thing to over and over again are the ones that are going to work out here. The ones who you have to say the same thing or give the same feedback to multiple times, you have to repeat yourself and it doesn't get done. You know, the people who can't really explain or articulate why they made a decision, that's not going to work out. I will say this, though. We joked earlier that, oh, yeah, you know, everybody wants to hire good people. Nobody wants to hire doofuses. But the truth is, the hardest thing to do when it comes time to hire somebody is to actually listen to yourself when you think somebody, and believe in yourself when you think somebody might be a doofus and not actually hire, right? Like the trick is to not hire the doofuses. It's not to identify the doofus. It's actually to not hire them because these people, you know, very often they're just not a fit for you and they can be a great fit somewhere else. But some of them are just, you know, professional job getters and they figured out how to make the right impression and come across as competent. And you've got your spidey senses going off and you're seeing all the yellow flags and there's no clear red flags, you know, and they don't come across as a doofus, but something's telling you like, I don't know, I'm not sure that this is somebody that's going to work out. Well, the trick is like, you know, if you're not 100% sure and it doesn't click into place, don't do it. It's not worth it.
How do you find the positive side of those people with accountability and humility? How do you... I mean, that's not a question on a Google form, right? So how do you suss that out when you're talking to somebody?
That's a really good question. I think some of it's just I don't want to say it's supernatural, right? Because it's not. But we talk.
You say it's
about,
learned. That's a little more that has a little more humility, right?
Yeah,
that's maybe. Psychic to our skills as entrepreneurs now. Thanks, JD. That's great.
Yeah, you got to be able to read their minds. No, seriously, like there's a thing that happens, like when you're vibrating on the same frequency as somebody, you can pick up on it really quickly. You know, when somebody's got something that really resonates with you and that you can relate to, that's a good sign. But don't get caught in the trap of always hiring people who you think are like you. Because the reason you want to hire people is because they bring something extra to the party. And I don't know that I can articulate concisely what it is, but I'll give it a go for the benefit of those people who want a real answer to that question. When you ask the typical questions in an interview about, you know, oh, tell me about your biggest failure, blah, 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 right? Like, the people who actually think about those questions and actually give you a thoughtful response, you know, that's a checkbox. Whether you agree with it or not, you know, is almost irrelevant. You want to understand how they made the decision, what they learned from the outcome, more than you want to evaluate their decision. Because anybody that is leaving somewhere and coming to you or coming out of school and joining you, their behaviors learn. Now, when they answer that question, if you see the door crack open to like wanting input or being open to rethinking how they handled it, even though that's what happened, that's somebody who can come into the fold and learn to do things the Simple Focus way. You know, it's not like joining a cult, but like we have a certain way that we like to do things because we believe in it. And one of the things that I do habitually here is hire talent to develop rather than fully developed talent. It's a couple of reasons. One is, you know, it's more affordable to hire folks who are younger in their careers or who have less experience. But the other is because if you find somebody who's a lifelong learner, somebody who wants accountability and wants to grow, and guess what? All you got to do is teach them. And so when you find that person who's receptive to that, that's what I think is the key.
Nice. Nice. I like that. Your evaluation of being on the same vibe sounds a lot like, if it's not a hell yes, it should be a no from Derek Sievers.
Yeah. I don't like the hell yes, let's get jazzed about it. It's more like the way, I can't remember who said this, so you'll have to find it for the show notes, but there's some poet or writer who wrote that, you know, at the end of a poem, it should click shut. And it's this very satisfying way that something snaps into place where it belongs and it fits. You know, that's what I'm looking for more than anything else. So I'm a lot more laid back. I'm not the hell yes type, right? I like things that just click into place. There's no wiggle.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. No, I like that. I think that's a little more succinct, if a bit touchy-feely. I think maybe we should bust out the crystals and have some rainbows at the end of the show here to sing Kumbaya. We're now going to move to a new agey show. We're not going to do all this hard entrepreneurial stuff anymore. We're just going to sit around in tie-dyes and chant. And
actually, if we could just spend the next 20 minutes in silence.
That's deep. That would be deep.
Just some transcendental meditation.
Yeah. Very zen, very zen. All right, so changing gears a little bit, you've got the freelance shop and you've got the SaaS businesses here.
Freelance.
Well, you've got your, I'm sorry, well, agency is the right word here.
Yeah, yeah, 20%. So we got 20, right. Yeah.
So you've got these two, let's call them really diverse, different kinds of businesses here. And I mean, even within the SaaS, there's some diversity there as well. That requires some kind of a structure there. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how does each business sort of manage itself, or how do you decide what, you know, what level of involvement you have in each of those agency versus SaaS businesses?
Sure. Well, you know, I usually just stare into the crystals and let them tell me what to do.
Why didn't I know that? Yeah.
No.
Mood ring when you're not sure, you know, get the magic eight ball out.
I'm not even sure if like, I don't know anything about crystals, so I don't even know if I offended somebody. And if I did, I'm sorry. I was trying to make a bad joke. I'll give you a real answer, though. The thing you have to remember is that I started out running an agency before the products. And one of the things that agencies are set up for and really good at is managing multiple clients, multiple projects. And so at the end of the day, I've got these SaaS apps that are clients of the agency. Okay, so I personally get to play the role of client to my own agency many times. But at the end of the day, you think about the agency is, you know, whether we're working with you know, one of our customers who needs, you know, a marketing website, or whether we're working with one of our apps that needs a new product feature added. You know, it's the same to them. It gets dropped into the project management software. Our project managers at Simple Focus run it like a project, albeit a long-term client on retainer. But still, I mean, we're kind of set up to work that way as far as context switching. You know, we built up teams that all know about different parts of the product. So some, you know, somebody on the team might know more about Ballpark than they know about Pulse, for example. Yeah, I think that's the simplest answer, is that the apps are treated like clients of the agency.
That's interesting. I actually wouldn't have expected that. I would have thought that you kind of had them sort of firewalled or separated in a way, but that's actually really cool. So does that mean that your SaaS businesses are kind of funding the agency, or do you also have independent clients in the agency and, you know, you're actually getting revenue on both sides?
As a business owner, one of the things you realize is that, like, all the money that comes in and all the money that goes out is yours, so it doesn't really matter to you. But from a, you know, a taxation perspective and a banking perspective and an accounting perspective, the way I've got it set up is that the apps are separate LLCs that pay a nominal fee into the agency to manage them. Think of the agency as a SaaS management company, if you will, that gets, you know, a portion of the revenue from the apps to operate the apps. So the apps don't have employees. The employees are all on Simple Focus's payroll. Now, two of the employees on the Simple Focus payroll are fully allocated to the apps, doing, you know, Rails development, customer support, and product management full time. They don't do any client work. And then when there are projects, you know, those two people are responsible for saying, hey, Simple Focus, we have a project. Simple Focus says, okay, tell us about it, gives them a price, gets approval, gets a budget, tracks their time, and treats it like a real client. Now, if you want to look at the finances, for example, of Simple Focus, to understand the value of Simple Focus as a business, you know, if you wanted to raise money or go to a bank or sell the company, you know, then you have to look at those people who are fully allocated to the apps and do what's called, you know, back them out or recast the business finances. So the balance sheet and the P&L on Simple Focus makes Simple Focus look like it's not as profitable as it could be, because it's carrying the payroll of two people who are spending their time working on the apps full time. But then it also, on the flip side, makes the apps look more profitable than they are, because they don't really have a ton of expenses. They have some agency fees, but that's really it, no payroll. But, you know, that's one of the luxuries I get to have as the business owner, because it's all my money in the end anyway. So I get to make that decision.
Cool.
From a personal perspective, how do you feel about the two sides of the businesses? Do you enjoy the work you do for one versus the other? Or, I mean, they're all your kids, so I know you love them all. But how do you feel about going to work at one side of things versus the other?
He wants to know who you love more.
Yeah, right.
Which is your favorite kid? Come on. There's a favorite.
You know, I joked with somebody about who my favorite actual kid was one time. And I said, you know, this kid, and I'm not going to use a gender pronoun or anything, because, you know, I don't want to hurt somebody's feelings in 15 years when they're listening to this. But, you know, I said, this kid, I think is my favorite. I think I love this kid the most. And what he said was, you don't love that kid any more than the other kids. You just relate to that child better.
Okay.
Right. So for me, it's not a question of whether I love Simple Focus more, or I love the apps, or I love one of the apps above the other apps. There are parts of the agency that I relate to and I enjoy more than parts of the apps. And there are parts of the apps that I enjoy more than the agency. But at the end of the day, like, I come to our office on Broad Avenue and I sit down and I deal with what's in front of me, and then I go home, you know. So I don't know that I have any particular affinity. I will say this, the apps are less risky, but they don't make as much revenue, you know. The apps could use more of my attention, and that they would probably grow and build value faster. They require me to be less on call. You know, so it might be a slightly easier lifestyle running the apps full time if I walked away from the agency. But then on the agency side of things, I really love relationships with people. I love sharing our gifts with clients who need them. I love finding that proper exchange of value at a really high level. I love, you know, the work that the team puts out. I love learning new things, learning about new businesses. I love deal making. I'm kind of a deal junkie, you know. So I love the sales and the relationships and getting to know everybody that you get to know from doing sales in the community. So, you know, I love that part of the agency, but I also am drawn to, you know, a little easier pace that comes along with the apps. But more than any of it, I feel like a responsibility and a duty to ensure that the team of people who are relying on me and the decisions I make for their income and provide for their families, I take that duty very seriously. And, you know, there are times when, you know, I haven't been able to follow through all the way on that. And there are times when I have been able to follow through all the way on that. But at the end of the day, no matter what happens, whether the business is going great or the business is struggling, the people are probably the part that I love the most about it. And Natalie Negley from WildBit says something that I think I'm going to, I want to repeat here for y'all because I believe it, is that her business, WildBit, runs like Postmark and DeployBot, multiple apps, but the company is the people, not the products. And if that's if that can be true, if that can be my answer, then I think that's my answer. You know, there are aspects of the agency that I love. I love the agency life. I love doing agency work. A lot of product people who started an agency say things like, "Ah, couldn't wait to get out of the agency." You know, the cash flow of an agency is stressful because, you know, it's deal based and it's up and it's down, and, you know, it's sort of feast or famine. You know, in the SaaS world, it's a lot more steady, which is a lot less stressful. But then, you know, you don't get that big endorphin rush from closing a six-figure deal. It's just, it just doesn't happen. So I don't know. I think they're both the yin to my yang. They're like two different sides of my personality.
Nice. I think that's a great answer. So let's talk about the deal junkie aspect of you here. And I certainly am not going to ask you to get help because I'm a little bit of a deal junkie myself, having done a few in my career, and there is definitely a rush that goes along with that. So you've acquired all these various businesses here: Sifter, Curated, Ballpark, Pulse, Temper, Clear Function. Let's talk about some specifics around those here. Let's start off by asking, what's the criteria that you have for buying a new business?
Ooh, I've actually written a blog post about this, but I took the contrarian approach and I said, here's the reasons I won't buy your business, right?
Oh, that's good too, you know.
Yeah.
I think I've got that question down the line here as well.
Yeah. You know, it was written to be more of advice for preparing to sell your business, I guess. The things I'm looking for when I buy a SaaS business are, you know, I am interested in a couple of things. Number one, I want B2B, not a consumer app. The reason is I don't want something that's going to have a bunch of free accounts. I don't want something that's going to have a really low monthly cost or annual cost, because it means you got to deal with a lot more volume, a lot more people, in other words, customers, to get to a point where it's worth it financially. And that means that you're going to have higher customer service expenses. And so going B2B lets me charge more per month, and it lets me keep my customer support down. So more revenue, less expense. I like that, right? That's one thing. Another thing I look for is it's got to fit with, you know, our technology back office, you know, so it can't be too crazy different from the other apps that we're running from a tech stack perspective. And for me, that's Rails, like Stripe, but we've got Sifters on Braintree. I like simple CRUD apps as well. The reason is because there's just less lines of code, less of a product to manage. It's not complicated. Adding features is going to be simpler. I like apps that meet all of those criteria. Bonus points if it kind of serves small businesses and the creative agency professional services market, because it's kind of what all of my apps do so far, and might as well kind of go with that. And another really important thing, and maybe the most important thing, is understanding the answer to the question, why do you want to sell?
Mm.
I don't really know whether, you know, I buy low or buy high because, you know, I've talked to people who won't spend nearly what I'll spend as far as a multiple on a product. And I've talked to people who will spend 50% more than I'm willing to spend on a product. And we're not talking about strategic acquisitions either. We're just talking about just cash flow acquisitions. By the way, I want it to be cash flowing positive and profitable and probably not come with a team so that we can take it in-house. So usually an independent solo founder who's been running it on his or her own time. There's a certain size I look for as well, you know, $100,000 a year and up in terms of annual revenue. But the answer to the question of why are you selling is really important, because the thing that I'm offering in addition to the purchase price is that I'm going to take your product and be responsible with it, take care of the customers, and for the most part, like, hold true to the vision that was set out in the beginning, so that, you know, if you care about your thing existing in the world a certain way because you believe in it, you know, you can count on me to more or less be that person. You know, if you care about your customers, you want to make sure they're not left out in the cold without the product that they love, you know, I'm your guy. If you're not interested in that, or that's not your one of your highest priorities, you know, I'm probably a lot less interested in buying from you, not because I resent you for having that opinion, but just because the negotiation is going to be different. The deal we make is going to be different. And there's plenty of other people who are willing to do that. But what I'm not going to do is buy you for your customers to roll them into some other product, you know, and I'm not going to buy your business to completely reinvent it and turn it into something else it never was. I'm not an innovator. You know, we're not going to like add AI to bug an issue tracking for Sifter or something weird like that. And I'm not going to roll it up into Jira, you know, or Atlassian. I'm going to run
Sifter. I was going to be a Sifter customer until you said that. Now I'm out.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you change your mind, I'll give you a coupon, buddy.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Does it come with a crystal?
I'll send you a crystal if you sign up for the big account.
The annual plan. There you go.
So you've acquired a couple businesses, a handful of businesses at this point, it looks like. Where and how do those kind of come about? I mean, are you buying those kind of off market, if you will? Are you approaching people, or do they come to you? How has that worked in the past?
A little bit of both. What happened for the first purchase and the second purchase is not what's happened for every purchase since then. I've bought at this point, I don't know, 8 or 10 different SaaS apps. I bought an agency as well that I merged into Simple Focus. The apps, though, let's talk about the first one, because there were a couple of guys in Memphis that ran Pulse, and they were ready to move on. And their why was really, you know, was just as real of a why as you can get on why they wanted to sell. One guy wanted to get in the ministry full time. He was going to go to seminary. And the other guy, you know, he was he had a high paying job for a tech company. And, you know, when they split the revenue from Pulse, it just wasn't really worth the distraction to them to keep, you know, having to reboot the server at 3 a.m. if it crashed or something crazy like that 5 or 10 years ago. So they decided to sell. And over 3 years, they couldn't find a buyer. And I kept asking them if they'd let me buy it. And they wouldn't take me seriously because my company at the time was much smaller and hadn't grown, and I didn't have that many employees. And they said, well, you know, it's going to cost some real money. And I was like, okay, yeah, well, how much? And they never would tell me, you know, because I was just, you know, some guy they knew. We were friends, but that was really, you know, that's, you know, just casual professional friends in town. And finally, one day, one of the founders called me up and said, you know, we can't sell it. Like, nobody wants to buy it. And I said, why not? He said, because it's too big, like, for anybody like us to afford. And it's too little for anybody who has money to care about.
Mm.
And I said,
oh, yeah.
How much is it, you know? He said, I don't know. I'd sell it to you for you know, 1x annual revenue. You know, how much is it? You know, let's see where you're at. I have no idea how much we're talking about. So he came out with a number, and I said, okay, I'll buy it. You know, and then he came back to me a couple of days later. And was like, we need to do 1.5x annual revenue. we can't bring ourselves to sell it for one time. I think we'll just hold on to it. I thought about it. It was still very fair. I asked around and somebody said, God, you know, if you could buy something that's kicking off, you know, X dollars and pay it back in 18 months, I'd do it. So I did it, you know. It was common sense. I was able to pay it back in 18 months. And so that was the acquisition. It was the only thing I bought. And then a couple years later, I saw that ballpark from the guys at Metalab. Andrew Wilkinson had posted on Twitter, like on New Year's Eve, hey, FYI, we're still trying to sell ballpark. And I remember ballpark because at the bottom of the marketing site, it said that it did cash flow forecasting. And Pulse did cash flow forecasting. And that's why I remembered it. So I checked it out. I said, oh God, these guys are like web famous. There's no way I'm going to be able to afford it. But you know, I was able to just kind of say, you know what? Hey, I'm interested. Let's talk. I've done this before with Pulse. I've bought a business before with Pulse. And so we went back and forth and pretty quickly struck a deal on ballpark. And then we wrote a blog post about the sale, the purchase, and Andrew wrote a blog post about it. And the next thing you knew, everybody and their cousin was tweeting me and saying, oh, you're that guy that buys multiple apps. And
come by mine, right?
Yeah, I've heard your name before. I can spell your name. Would you like to buy my app?
Yeah, so I was all of a sudden known as a guy who had a portfolio of SaaS apps. And so all of a sudden, real quickly, I started getting deal flows, which you call it now, from people who were like, I know an app. I know a guy. Let's talk. Everybody wanted to talk because, you know, there was a blog post I could point to that was kind of legitimizing. And, you know, since then, is they sort of come to me in spurts and fits and stops. And, you know, I probably see four or five come across my desk in a week on average, sometimes more. Sometimes I'll go a week or two without hearing anything. And so I can look at these and kind of know what's going on in the world. And more often than not, it's not what I'm looking for, but I can help somebody who's selling. I give them the perspective from the other side. I'm like, all right, here's what they're going to be interested in. Here's what they're going to care about, and I can help people. That's one of the things I really enjoy doing is just meeting folks who've kind of, you know, gotten something up to $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 a year, sometimes $800,000 a year with like no employees or one employee, and helping them think about the next phase of their career. It's really fun to do that.
How do you look at that? That's, I think, an interesting thing that a lot of us fall into is we're, you know, single founder, or it's us and some contractors or something, and we can get something doing whatever amount of money, $10,000, $20,000 a month in revenue. But then how do you think about, like, all right, now what if we want to do $100,000 a month in revenue or something, like, you know, to make these quote big businesses? I mean, you guys have several different businesses. I don't know if any of them are doing that much, but together you guys are running kind of a big business that's diversified between services and products, and they're all working well together. How do you coach somebody that comes to you and says, okay, I got this thing, thinking about selling, and you might say, don't sell it, just go build it and grow it and create a real kind of system and business around it, and make that mental jump, right?
Well, I helped somebody the other day who had a business that really wasn't worth anything because it was too small to be worth any sort of multiple. So there's a size for some of these apps where your buyers aren't going to pay you what you'd make in a year. And I'd tell you to just stick with it for a couple of years until you get to $50,000 or $100,000 in annual revenue. But below that, nobody's really going to pay you for the revenue. They're just going to be paying you to get it off your hands, and maybe they can do something with it. But then, like, there's this guy I met one time. He's running some business. A very simple business, nothing sexy. It's just kind of like, you know, a valuable thing that he made for a certain market. And he's doing like $100,000 a month in monthly recurring revenue. And he's got like a contractor like 20 hours a week and a customer support person like $45,000 a year.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you're killing it, right? Like, holy cow. And you got this. Boring ass business.
That's great, right?
Not a
boring is good.
This is, how does this fulfill you? You know, because, you know, money's not his concern and he wants to sell it. And he was telling me, yeah, so I'm ready for the next thing. you know, I'm ready to cash out. I was like, okay, look, here's the thing. Your business is really old. It's grown organically. It's grown, you know, but it's grown very organically. And you pretty much own the market for this hyper niche. So nobody's going to buy your business to scale it. Nobody's going to buy your business to roll it in to some bigger thing at a high multiple. Your business is really worth, like, I don't know, maybe 3x revenue.
Mm.
I would just run that sucker, you know,
yeah,
for the next 6 years. And you know, heck, pay somebody else to, like, do the work you're doing if you want to, or just keep working 20 hours a week. You know, it's not like it's worth more to hold that business than it is to sell that business. So that's two examples of people I told. I was like, I think you need to hold your business. But then at the same time, like he's not really fulfilled by this business. It's kind of a boring business. It's nothing special. He knows everything there is to know. He knows everybody there is to know in that world. He's got this thing, and you know, it's not going to grow forever because the market's not really going to get much bigger. And he's sort of stuck with it. I mean, and you think, oh, poor guy, he's pulling down $1 million a year, working 20 hours a week.
Yeah, that's.
But he's kind of in a crappy situation because it's not like he could sell that business for an insane multiple and, like, retire. You know,
right.
Because he's in his 20s, he's ready to have his first kid. He lives in Brooklyn or something, you know. I'm like, dude, I would move somewhere with a cheap cost of living, like Indiana, get a 40,000 square foot house, but no, he wants to live in New York, which is fine. And so, you know, he can continue to make a good living for himself, but that guy's going to work for a living, and that's okay. But, like, the problem is he's torn. So he says, I want to do this new thing. He starts telling me about his new thing, and I'm like, dude, let me tell you something. You're not going to do this again. That's what the odds are. You're not, like, you caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, right.
Your next business is not going to grow like this. Your next business is not going to be this special and this unique. So, like, get prepared to be a little frustrated, you know? Go for it by all means. But what I would do is I would do it on the side with the other 20 hours a week. And so, you know, that was the advice I gave him. Then there's some people I'm like, okay, it's time to sell your app. This is a good spot for you to sell because their why is really compelling. You know, they've got a business that's maybe doing $150,000 a year, and they've got another business that's doing $100,000 a month, and it's only like 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you think I told them to sell?
Right, right,
mm-hmm.
Right. And like, it depends on what he wants to do with his life. So, you know, I start asking the questions that really matter at that point.
All right, so let's get to the other piece of this that you had said that you had written the blog post about. What kind of businesses would you not touch with a 39.5-foot pole?
Okay.
Or a crystal, you know, whatever. Yeah.
I don't know anything about crystals. You brought up crystals. I was talking about poetry, you know.
This is going to be the crystal episode. I'm going to somehow work crystals into the title just to annoy you.
Okay, that's fine. So the blog post you're talking about is titled something like the 14 things that'll keep me from buying your SaaS business or your app or something like that. I remember the first reason is that I think what I said was you're a jackleg.
Better than a jackass, I guess.
Yeah, well, a jackleg is like a – jackass is one thing, right? But a jackleg is a little bit different. Somebody's kind of a doofus, right? It's like you're not smart. You know, you don't have integrity. People don't really respect you. When you ask somebody about about somebody else, and they go, so what do you think about it? Do you know him?
Before I answer and tell you something that's going to make me regret what I said.
Exactly. Like, but when you ask somebody, you know, about somebody that's really admirable, and their immediate response is, oh my God, I love that guy, right? He's great. Or like, oh, she's the smartest person I know, right? Isn't she nice? You know, or whatever. Like, jackleg's not going to get that kind of response. I'm not going to buy an app that's ugly, okay? I run a design agency. It takes too much time and energy to go from ugly to pretty, and it's not good for my reputation to run ugly apps. And if you don't know it's ugly, that's a bigger indicator that you got some problems. Like, people who don't know it's ugly, They're like, it's not ugly. Yeah, it's ugly. Like, okay, if you don't know it's ugly, that's a pretty good indication that the rest of your business is not in good shape because you don't have taste.
Yeah.
You should be at the point where you can talk very articulately about the SaaS metrics that matter. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, reading the Barometrics blog and talking about what Josh thinks is important. I'm talking about what, like, what's important for your business. What SaaS metrics in your business mean? Because everybody's app is a special snowflake. I've got an app that I think is healthy with an 8 or 9% churn, right?
Yeah.
And then I've got another app that I think is healthy. It's got 2% churn. So, like, you know, it depends on the app, right? So, like, you know, don't give me this, oh, I'm not going to buy something with more than 4% churn or whatever, right? Like you got to know what your metrics mean for your business.
Yeah, I think that's a really sage point because, I mean, like, our app has some metrics that I think are really good, and they've come sort of easily to us. So I wonder if, like, you know, based on what Josh Pickford thinks, maybe they're good, but for us, they could be a lot better because we certainly haven't worked at some of them very much. I wonder, talking about being able to talk about your metrics, do you look at, like, talking about your customer and who they are and where you find them as being really valuable? Because that's something I think a lot about is, like, in a new business or when I'm looking to expand my marketing and acquisition channels, I feel like I ought to know where to get my customers as, like, maybe the most important thing of a business.
That's a really good question. And I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer that question because I've never had to define that from the beginning. Remember, I buy apps.
Right, but when you're talking to the people that you're buying the apps from, they know where to get customers?
Yeah, they've already figured it out because I'm not going to buy an app that doesn't have customers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I'm also not going to buy an app that spends any money on customer acquisition.
Okay.
So I'm not the typical buyer. I'm buying a very specific thing, right? Zero customer acquisition cost is my thing. So if you are written up in you know, listicles and blogs, and you got reviews, and you got organic SEO, and people like word of mouth referral and sharing your app, that's what I thrive on, right? Because it's very easy to do the marketing. You basically put together a decent website, it sits out there, people show up, and they convert. I'm not spending any money on advertising on any of my apps. Now, I'm not bragging about that. I'm just saying that it's not something that I have been able to focus on right now because Simple Focus and I, you know, but Simple Focus is not an advertising agency. We don't go and buy online ads. That's not what we're good at. And I'm not an advertising person myself. Instead, what I look for is an app that's got a good reputation, good organic SEO, a couple hundred visitors a day on its own, just organically, where you can convert those into users just by putting together a good, compelling argument about why they should sign up for your product.
Yeah.
You know, getting some press occasionally is cool. That's all good. But at the end of the day, like, I haven't gone through the process for my apps of identifying the ideal customer and knowing where to go get them, you know, as an initiative. Now, we do that kind of work for our customers at Simple Focus from time to time. We're kind of beginning that with one of my apps, Pulse, right now, because we've got a sneaking suspicion that they're hanging around QuickBooks, you know, because it's a cash flow management app and we do something that QuickBooks doesn't do. And they want done, and so we think that's going to be a good place to go find them, and might really transform the shape and the size of the business. But, like, I'm not the expert in that. I actually, one of the reasons I buy apps is because I've never been able to, you know, start an app from the ground up and go from zero customers to 200 customers.
Mm-hmm.
I buy apps from people who already figured that out because that's the hardest, riskiest part to me that I don't understand.
Totally agree on that one. Speaking as a man who's tried to build something from scratch, that was the hardest part to figure it out. And ultimately, it wasn't something I could crack. So you're right. If somebody hasn't got that cracked, that would be a really tough nut to purchase at that point.
A couple of other things that I'll go and say are on my list of things that are going to make me not want to buy your app is on the financial side of things. If your books are a mess, that's not any good. Like, I don't want to be the one who has to untangle your books for you. Somebody else can do that. I'm not interested in taking the risk and figuring all that out. I want clean books and a simple, you know, asset purchase sale. Those are two other things that I'm looking for as well. A lot of trust because you're not a jackleg you got clean books, you know what you're doing, and you've been running a good business. There's a lot more that I put in the blog post that I think your listeners can go find for themselves, but those are the highlights that I remember.
Cool, and we'll put that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, JD, if somebody wants to read more about, you know, things that you recommend for businesses or learn more about the businesses that you've got, where would they find you on the web or the Twitter sphere, social media land?
So if you can spell my last name, Graffam, G-R-A-F-F-A-M, you could just Google JD Graffam. That's the easiest way to find me online. There's not any other JD Graffams. I'm JD Graffam on Twitter, on Medium. You know, my website is simplefocus.com, and you know, my email address, JD@simplefocus.com. I have sort of a parent company called Graffam Co's, and that is at graph.am. Yeah, they can go any of those places and find out more about me and reach out and get in touch, say hi. I'd love to talk.
Awesome. JD, thanks so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. It was awesome.
Thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.